Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is September 5th, 2013. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. We have a lot of upcoming events. It's the fall. Everybody's ready to get together. I'm going to be speaking at the CASE Summit in Tucson on October 4th, 5th, and 6th. I'll be at the conference. The topic is Your Investment Strategy, Avoiding the Material Emission Pitfalls. We're going to be talking about how to deal with a real deal when it comes to investing your money. Then on October 10th, I'm going to be in Boulder, Colorado, at the Breakthrough Energy Movement, and that's the interview tonight. We're going to be talking about Breakthrough Energy with one of the conference organizers, and Joel Garbon, who's leader of the new energy movement here in the States. My topic is going to be on crowdfunding, and we're also going to have a Soleri report on crowdfunding coming up in the third week of September, so stay tuned for that. We'll have a subscriber luncheon in Boulder. We're also going to have one in San Francisco, contiguous to the speech I'm giving on real estate and global financial market trends at the Appraisers Conference in San Francisco at the end of October. So keep an eye out for that. You can sign up for the Boulder lunch if you're going to be in Colorado that weekend, and we'll put the San Francisco luncheon up in about a week or two. Our theme tonight is crunch time opportunities. You've thought about the worst case. You have your disaster recovery plan. Now the question is, where's the opportunity to be useful? If you look around the world, there are more risks than you could possibly imagine. In some respects, it's always been that way. If you sit in the shoes of one of your ancestors in 1900 and look forward to the 20th century as to what they had to navigate, it was quite something. A lot of people didn't make it. So this is the way the world is. I have a friend who got me to read a great book on energy leadership, and it requires you at every moment, whenever anything is going on, including things you think are terrible, to say, this is an opportunity. So take a look around you and say, where is an opportunity to be of service? Because there are many people who could use your assistance, that I'm sure of. One opportunity, we're going to get together. The Soleri team comes together once a year, and we're coming together for the Soleri Summit, where we talk about what have we done right over the last year, what did we get wrong, what can we do to support and delight our subscribers and grow our audience. So send ideas and input, if you'd like to give it to us, to communicate at soleri.com, and we'll make sure that your voice gets heard in our deliberations. Particularly, let us know what are the interviews we could do or the coverage we could provide that would be most helpful to you. And again, send your input to communicate at soleri.com. The last report I did 2 weeks ago, we had a zombie attack, I'm afraid to say. It's described in one of our blog posts about it. But for those of you who got kicked off by the webinar software, a little token to express our apology has gone out in the mail. If you were on that call and didn't get that token, please let us know at customerservice@soleri.com. Okay, we've got great slides tonight. If you can, remember to watch them on the webinar software if you're listening to this live. Money and markets, of course. What we've got to talk about is Syria. The pro-Syria team, led by President Obama and Kerry, are bogged down in the mud. They've been forced to go to Congress. Congress has come back. Some members of Congress who were expected back on the 9th have come back early. There's a lot of wrangling going on. Very bad for the president. The Brits have voted no, and that's tough because usually it's the Brits swing in as the close ally, and the Anglo-American Alliance acts as one. This time, the U.S. is going to have to go it alone. Polls show that the Americans are very opposed to war in Syria of any kind, even if it's not boots on the ground. There's a G20 meeting in St. Petersburg today and tomorrow. Putin apparently opened, saying many people didn't want to talk about what was on the agenda. They wanted time to talk about Syria. So Putin is clearly applying the torture. Among other things, the president of Brazil has canceled their trip, apparently as a result of the Snowden revelations. Of course, NSA was hacking and tracking numerous foreign leaders and dignitaries. And, of course, Snowden now being under Putin's protection and Obama having to deal with this at G20, is, you know, I'm sure it's a difficult 2 days. Now, what is all of this about? If you look at the plan laid out by the Pentagon after 9/11, you had a list of countries that were expected to be attacked, occupied, and basically brought into empire after 9/11. Syria was on the list. I heard that presented several times. A great way of understanding the sort of overall grand chessboard is a video I put up by General Wesley Clark describing the fact that that was the plan at the top of the administration right after 9/11, and it continues. In part, it's about, yes, it's about the dollar. In part, it's about gas and oil. If you look at the one our cartoonist made, our latest Soleri tune, it's up on the blog, and he sent me one that was sort of deriding Obama pushing for Syria, but it didn't really give any of the deeper meaning. And in fact, I sent him a little note back saying, here, I want something that's really about the real deal. And he put that note up on his Facebook page. So we put it up with the first draft. If you click back on the blog, you'll find it. But the new one clearly mentions the dollar issue and gas and oil. But I think it's about a lot more than that. And one of the things that makes the leadership look so ridiculous is they're not in a position to say. And my guess at the end of the day is if you look at both sides of the squabble, whether it's the Chinese and the Russians trying to lock up Middle Eastern market share and oil and other resources, or the Americans, you know, neither side is for the people. You know, we have a series of increasingly totalitarian and centralized regimes squabbling with each other. And frankly, as long as they're squabbling with each other, we're probably better off than if one of them gets their way globally. But in, you know, all of them are members of the pro-centralization team. As far as I'm concerned, I put a little blog post up on the blog today about false flag operations. And one of the things I said, the gods are warring. And as I said, part of it involves more fallout from the NSA spying revelations, which from Obama's standpoint couldn't come at a worse time. Let's talk about disassociated leadership. There was a Bill Moyers interview of a New York Times editor who's written a new book called This Town, and it has really resonated with people because it's apparently done an effective job of communicating the fact that you have an entire town that makes money from centralization, including centralization that causes the economy to fail, causes people to fail. The worse things get, the more money they make. So you have a win-lose relationship between their profits and the general wealth and well-being of the whole. So it's almost like they're being paid and enjoy liquidating the American people and people globally. But the insensitivity and the sort of craziness of it somehow magically got communicated in this book, in this interview, and it's really resonating. Somehow, finally, people are beginning to realize that you have a group of leaders who are completely disassociated from real life. I'm reminded of a song by Leonard Cohen where he sings, "We are blinded by the beauty of our weapons." These are people who've been protected by, you know, powerful weaponry, media propaganda, and covert operations. They thought the system was working. The reality is system ultimately can't work just by force. There has to be the mandate of heaven. In no story this week was the example of this kind of cluelessness worse than a private briefing that a group of agricultural leaders, including Joel Salatin, received from the Secretary of Agriculture, who talked about the fact that the rural population was shrinking, and that was very bad because they were the people who provided young men and young women into the military. So if the population shrinks, then you have trouble getting more soldiers. And Salatin was completely stupefied and wrote a great blog post about the fact that the Secretary of Agriculture doesn't mind farms disappearing. He just minds, you know, not being able to source more kids for the military. This is exactly the kind of topics we were talking with Colonel Wilkerson in our interview several weeks ago with him. And if you haven't listened to that, I would really recommend it because he was basically saying, look, you know, we have real problems. We can't afford to have leadership that have, you know, been promoted just because they make more money for defense contractors. And we need greater transparency because we need to deal with real problems. We need our resources going there. So you have an instability in the situation because we now have a leadership group that has risen based on a certain kind of politics and unfortunately are becoming increasingly clueless. I keep saying, where is Lee Atwater when we need him? Lee Atwater being the campaign manager for George H.W. Bush, who was really from, you know, he really came up from the bottom and he stayed in touch with the streets and brought a kind of political intelligence to Washington that it's missing right now. Financial markets were in crunch time. If you take a look at the slides that we've put up, and again, we'll have the slides on the blog if you're not listening live. What you're beginning to see, interest rates are continuing to sneak up. And what we have is as we've talked about so many times in the Salieri Report, the bonds and contingent liabilities in the legacy systems are really beginning to pinch. The long-term bull market in bonds is over. Now the IUs are coming due. We have political leadership trying to sort of go around in circles rather than tell people the bad news. And part of what you're seeing in Syria and the different leadership is squabbling over who's going to get what cash flows as those IOUs come due, because the pain is real. The Fed meeting is coming up on September 17th and 18th. And the big question, of course, in everybody's mind in the markets is, will they start to taper? If they do, this pendulum of pulling capital from the emerging markets is no doubt going to continue. It's going to create more tension in the bond market. If they don't taper in September because of sort of the discomfort of what's going on, don't be surprised if they make more announcements about when they are. But tapering's coming, as I said. The leadership has decided to lower the boom. We have the Germans elections on the 22nd. So Merkel's head is on the block, and that's going to have a lot to say about how the workouts in Europe continue to go down. And I think after that is when the bail-ins are likely to proceed. Now, even though we have and let me just say a few words about a couple of the markets. The emerging markets have been correcting down, as has the North America market, and just in the last 20 to or few months. And then Europe, which has been relatively flat, we've seen a little, as talk of war goes up, the equity markets turn up. Gold, which has been rising, it's up about 8% over the last few weeks, is now got hit hard today, so it's turning down. But I would basically describe all of this as noise and going sideways. It wouldn't surprise me if gold heads down in another correction before it comes up. Again, we're coming into the strongest time of the year, so I think whether it goes down or sideways for the next month or two, that may just be noise. We'll talk a lot more about precious metals next week with Franklin Sanders. But sitting off in the corner with plenty of money is the guys with the black budget boys, as I would say. Interestingly enough, they appear to be the ones pushing hardest for war. Maybe they'll finally wake up and smell the roses and say, you know, it's hard to keep doing these things unless you have some support from the population. You can't just keep harvesting the population and expecting them to show up and support you on these things. They clearly want a move into Syria. There's rumors of unauthorized nuclear bombs moving into South Carolina, you know, question mark for what reason. But we're seeing a lot more information on the black budget sneak out. And I think it's because as the leadership seems disassociated and it becomes inconceivable to understand why we want war in Syria without, deeper understanding of reality, I think people are finally beginning to take a look at what's really going on. We saw Richard Sauter just came out with a new pretty good book on underground facilities, and I posted a review. It's up on the blog. Lars Scholl also had a great interview with one of the researchers on JFK that pointed out that he estimates that over 1,000 people have now been killed in the process of covering up the assassination. I think that's probably a pretty reasonable number. And I always stress to the Celeri Report subscribers, please don't underestimate how many people have tried to do the right thing in America and how many people have been harmed and destroyed and including killed. We also see lots of materials coming out on things. I put up a little review of Moon Rising and Moon Views, two documentaries about what in the world's going on the moon, working with the NASA sort of video and photo archives. Very interesting documentary. But one of the ideas that came up was space elevators, and I put a couple of the videos up in Wildcard so you could see what the idea is. Interestingly enough, as the new technology, both composite materials and fabrication technology, starts to come into into the economy, and as Dr. Farrell says, he thinks a lot of it's coming out of the black budget, which wouldn't surprise me, a lot of these ideas become more practicable. Once you have something like graphene coming out of the lab, when and if that happens, you know, it becomes a lot more feasible to build something like a space elevator. So don't be surprised. And I think it's one of the reasons you're seeing a lot of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs talking about space and going into space, because the new technology makes it more feasible. One other very interesting black budget story, back a week or two on the blog, more on the San Bernardino bankruptcy. Little known fact, San Bernardino was the absolute center of black budget mortgage fraud. So, that in and of itself. But keep expecting this stuff to leak out and start to get integrated with information about what's going on and what it has to do with things like the sort of kooky behavior of the leadership and going into places like Syria. Because at some point, I think we're all going to want an integrated picture of reality, and we're not going to get it. As I said, the global economy at this point is really run to serve the black budget. And so you have a force that's harvesting the entire planet, trillions of dollars going into it. And now we have a great deal of capital throughout the world moved into the black budget, sort of controlled corporations. And so, if that's where all the money's disappearing into and that's where all the technology is, at some point, we're going to have to understand it and deal with it in the overt world. Also on the blog this week, the interview that I did last month with Eunice Boston on coming clean and sort of cleaning and making sure your home is beautiful was so popular and really triggered some delightful insights. We decided to make it accessible to the Celeri blog readers because it's a great sort of example of what you get through the Celeri Report, which is very unique. So if you haven't and are interested, please feel free to send that forward to your friends and family and network. It's a wonderful interview, and I think gives just wonderful tidbits on what you can do to make your life more wonderful. Stupidest idea of the week. For many years, I supported myself with tips as a waitress or bartender. That was a very important source of income when I was in college. And this week, an IRS rule is leading restaurants to rethink automatic tips so that they won't put a tip on the check. Now, why is this so horrible? Well, one, it absolutely can contribute to much lower earnings for waitresses, but it comes at exactly the same time that Obamacare has caused many of the chain restaurants to reconsider their employment policies. We now have over 250 major employers who have cut work hours, jobs, or taken other steps so they can avoid or pull health care. So here we have employees who've been getting health care, and now they're going to lose it as a result of these companies trying to duck Obamacare. And so if you're a waitress, you're losing your health care at the same time the IRS is cutting your tips. It's almost like the administration has decided to make war on bartenders and waitresses, so and busboys. So if I could say any one thing you can do as a blow for democracy is please, please leave big tips for waitresses and bartenders and make sure you leave them in cash. Our hero this week is the CEO of Lenovo, one of the largest manufacturers of computers in the world. His name is Yang Yuan King, and he has decided to share his $3.25 million bonus with low-paid manufacturing employees. I think that's fantastic. And this is a man who I suspect thinks he's going to make money. He's going to make it all back on his options if the employees do a great job. So I think it's smart business. And but don't underestimate what a courageous act it is. I used to sneak part of my bonus out to the people who worked for me. When I was at Dylan Reed, it was against the rules. It was one of the few rules I would ever break. But the reality is, you know, if executives start doing this, it could force other executives to change. And so if you do it, you can, you're considered to be the stinker. But kudos for him. Ask Catherine. Okay, a question about oil. We have peak oil and limited resources and have abiotic oil and renewable resources. With the fallback of the Anglosphere into North America, what is your best guesstimate of the reported oil reserves of eastern Montana and North and South Dakota? Is this a temporary patch of plundering or a long-term strip mine approach? Also, any thoughts as to why this approach was taken in respect to other objectives that may be more nuanced than the obvious ones? Thank you for your truthful approach to reality. Take care. I think if you're the Anglo-American Alliance and you're looking to maintain control, first using the reserves in the Middle East and globally, and then moving back to reserves here while you develop more and newer technology, is, you know, certainly fits with the building of empire. It makes sense to me. That's what I guess it is. How much they're depending or how long-lived the reserves are. In North America, I suspect they are pretty long-lived, particularly if Europe does the same. There's a lot of resistance to fracking technology in Europe, but I would expect ultimately to for fracking to work out there. So I suspect the reserves here are pretty long-lived. If abiotic oil turns out to be true, and I don't know that it is, the life is then even longer. Jim Gillespie, Catherine, you've mentioned that you've learned through your own investigation and study that we as a nation and as a world can have everyone living in total abundance if the powers that be really wanted it that way. Keeping this mind, I'm assuming this means that all of the boom and bust that we've experienced, as well as the difficult economy that we're dealing right now, have been because the powers that be have wanted it this way. Is this correct? I would say, you know, I don't want to put everything on the powers that be, but there's no doubt about it that we have an extremely primitive culture, that the leadership encourages all sorts of boom and bust and divide and control and is harvesting the economy in very significant ways. If you want to understand how wealthy we are, you know, take a look at how much money has gone down the black budget and what it's paid for. And when you realize what we've been supporting without any kind of return on investment to us, it's really a testimony to how wealthy we are. So I don't think it's just the leadership. There's a lot of what I would call stinking thinking everywhere in the population. But I do think there is no economic reason that we don't have total abundance. I think our problems are political. And that's why I think there's no more important question to ask and answer than who's really in control and why are we behaving this way. Jim Sinclair, hi Catherine, Jim Sinclair sent out a video about public banking. What do you think? I put up an interview I did with Bonnie Faulkner to talk about solutions that were terrible ideas, one of them being B corporations and the other idea being public banks. The idea of giving the government even more subsidized credit so that they can steal away the market share of private local banks and credit unions, thus even more centralizing the economy and destroying more family wealth. I can't think of a worse idea. Anyway, but if you want to know more, check out the latest Bonnie Faulkner interview that we posted on the blog and is in your, it's sort of a special Solari report, and it's up on the Resource Center. Wondering about the meaning of this today, MoveOn.org just sent out an official vote opinion poll to its members. The polling question: should MoveOn support or oppose congressional authorization to use military force in Syria? This appears significant. Yes, MoveOn did do a poll, and I believe they got a 73% opposition. Another question. What about William Engdahl as a guest? We've had William Engdahl on before, and I would anticipate having him back as a guest. I think he's very capable and interesting writer on the sort of global geopolitics. Another question. I see that Richard Fisher, and he's the president of the Dallas Fed, is classified as one of the wealthiest Fed governors with a net worth of $21 million. While the market cap of J.P. Morgan is 10,000 times bigger at $190 billion, and it has no 5% or larger owners. So here's my question. Who are the banksters, and how much are they worth approximately, and how is it that they don't seem to control J.P. Morgan? I heard Jim Sinclair say that the headline news you hear are the banksters manipulating things don't seem to make sense to me, as the net worth seems to be dwarfed by people like Gates, etc. So who is actually manipulating, controlling Anglo-American finances? Finances are not controlled by who has money. Finances are controlled by who has the power to authorize people being killed with no, you know, above the law and with impunity. So if I have the power to kill with impunity, then I control. And so control works through physical force. It does not work through money. Money is certainly important, but I assure you there are a lot of billionaires who, in the scheme of things, are surprisingly clueless and surprisingly powerless, believe it or not. Okay, let me just check and see if there are more questions. No, that's it. Okay, our interview tonight is with Jeroen van Straten, who's the foundation chairman for Global Breakthrough Energy Movement. He and his team organized the conference in Holland last year. They're organizing the one in Boulder. And then we're also joined by Joel Garbon, the president of New Energy Movement. He's also the author of a great introductory book, Breakthrough Power, How Quantum Leap Energy Inventions Can Transform Our World. And you can, from the blog, you can link to the conference, see the program. I'll be there. Foster Gamble will be there. There's going to be a lot of scientists and inventors. It's a very, very interesting conference. Some of it goes completely over my head. I keep trying to understand what cold fusion really is. But it's certainly filled with very positive people looking to provide energy in a way that has far less environmental harm than many of the fossil fuel energy technologies. So it's a very interesting group, not just about energy, but about models to sort of reinvent and change our world. And it's a wonderful group of people. So the interview's up on the blog. Jeroen was coming in from Holland. He's a little bit harder to understand. So we made sure to get the transcript up this evening. So if you have trouble following the audio, the transcript is there. And I hope you enjoy it. For Let's Go to the Movies, we chose a wonderful, delightful movie from Chile called No. And it's about an advertising executive who helps with the plebiscite on Pinochet as to sort of whether Pinochet will continue to lead Chile or Chile will turn to a more democratic form of government. And while I think that it doesn't describe the 100% of the story on the plebiscite and the politics of who is pulling the strings behind the scenes, it is a very important reminder that successful politics means offering a positive vision, not a negative one. And you have this very delightful young advertising executive trying to persuade a whole bunch of serious activists that they need to be a little bit more charming, and that talking about some of the more gruesome truth is not necessarily going to help them win their win, necessitating, you know, a majority of the voters picking no. Anyway, so he's trying to win the day for no by getting people to have a yes kind of attitude. And it's a very charming reminder that the thing that wins the day in politics is a positive vision and helping people into a positive vision. So, and that's, I know as someone who deals with the dark side of the world, it can be very easy to forget. So a very charming movie from Chile, a small country that produces lots of great things. Anyway, in closing, coming up next week, we have a lot to talk about next week in Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin. The following week will be our coming clean for the month. I'll be talking about crowdfunding. We're expecting the new regulations from the SEC to come out in October or before the end of the year. I'm still surprised at how many people tell me, what's crowdfunding? Please go to the blog and just look up the articles on crowdfunding. Really educate yourself on crowdfunding and what's coming, because I think, you know, as Ed Sullivan used to say, this is going to be really, really big. And it's something I want you to know about, and it's something I want you to get ready for. And I'm hoping that'll be a good Solari report to introduce you. We'll be talking about it a lot on the Solari report, because I think this is going to be a development in the financial markets that's going to have a profound impact on our world in a whole variety of different ways. It's going to be not just a North America phenomenon or an Anglo-American phenomenon. It's going to be a global phenomenon. It's going to roll out in Europe at the same time, and I no doubt in Asia as well. And then, of course, the following week, John Rappaport will be back. So until September 12th, next week with Franklin Sanders, ladies and gentlemen, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there's a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.